Touchdown wins the game. Field goal, and we keep going. Howard left side. To the 10. To the 5. Game over.
Good evening, everybody. Justin Kaufman here. The download, truncated version till 11 o'clock when Patty Vasquez takes over. If you're pulled over from listening to the Hawks lose one out in Boston, it's okay. It's preseason, doesn't it? Let's just move on from that. Chicago Bears yesterday got their first victory of the season. They go to 1-2 with an overtime victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. What a game. The Chicago Bears saved their season, taking on one of the better teams in the NFL at Soldier Field, of course. Tonight, Monday evening quarterback. What did we like? What did we not like? Is this the most pessimistic win in Bears history? Really feels that way. Joining me on the line, Adam Hoge. He is the man who covers the Bears for WGN Radio. You can find it at WGNradio.com/Bears. And you, 312-981-7200. You can text, you can call, but we're talking Bears for the entire hour. Adam Hoge, how are you, my man?
I'm good. Yeah, Bears get a victory. Didn't see that coming. It was certainly wacky. It didn't really go as anyone would have planned. But, hey, a win's a win.
All right, let's talk about that win, because we'll start off with what's your impressions of the overtime victory. Before we get into the nuts and bolts, and we will for this entire hour, what's your takeaway from watching the Bears beat the Steelers in overtime?
Well, I think the biggest thing is, and you just called this the most pessimistic win in a while, and so I hate to be pessimistic, but the Steelers played really bad. And just going back and watching it again today, they did not play well at all. They had mistakes across the board, and Ben Roethlisberger did not have a great game at all. And so that helped, but the Bears, give them credit, they took advantage of that. And while they didn't have a perfect game either, they had plenty of penalties, certainly the Marcus Cooper play that we'll get into, I'm sure, a lot. They made plenty of mistakes. It really could have been a much easier victory for the Bears, considering how poorly the Steelers played. But I do like that, hey, they came out in overtime, and they made it pretty easy for themselves in overtime. And even though Tariq Cohen had, what would have been one of the most memorable runs in team history.
Yeah, it was a touchdown. That was ridiculous. They called that back. I don't want to get into that, but that's okay. They had to save face on that, but go ahead.
And even though it happened, because that was just one of those where you're going, come on. I mean, it's such a great play. That's a walk-off win. You don't want that called back. But so in that moment, I'm going, oh, man, how are they going to find a way to lose this game now that that got called back? But it only took two more Jordan Howard runs to get in. So give them credit for that. Overall, the run blocking was tremendous throughout the game.
All right, so does this solidify the Bears' attitude for this season? And what kind of team? What is their personality? Because they ran the ball crazy, but my takeaway is this is a defensive team that will keep them in the game if the Bears offense can do what they can to not turn the ball over.
There's a couple different ways we can look at it. We can talk about Mike Lennon, which we'll do in a second, and I don't know if you just saw my tweets that I just put out right before we came on here. I'll go through them because I just charted Mike Lennon's entire game, the numbers are crazy. We'll get into that in a little bit, but you mentioned the defense, and I do want to talk about that first because I don't think we're talking about the defense enough. And I'll give you credit, Justin. You were all over this, even going back to training camp. I mean, one of the first times I came on with you for one of these hour-long segments, you were fired up about the defense and asking me about them. And despite some injuries that they've had, and they suffered another bad one yesterday with safety Quentin Demps, who broke his arm, their front seven, and really the defensive line, I would say, is playing at an incredibly high level. And what that is allowing them to do is mask some deficiencies behind the front seven. And overall, I would say, it's not like they're dominant. It's not like this is the defense the Bears had when they went to the Super Bowl about a decade ago, or certainly, 85. I always hate bringing up the 85 Bears. It's not to that level. Yeah. But pretty darn consistent through 3 weeks, and giving this team a chance to win, despite the fact, and this sounds like an exaggeration, but we can go into it, they pretty much beat the Steelers without a quarterback.
They did. I mean, it's pretty amazing because and not only that, but the offense continued to put the Bears and defense, the entire team, behind the eight ball. Two turnovers deep in Steeler territory. that gave most of the points in the second half to tie the game up. But it has been the defense that, I mean, they are short one thing, and that's turning that ball, like getting the ball, intercepting the ball, going to get some picks. If they can somehow get that killer instinct and find interceptions and turnovers, this is top 10 defense, and they continue to show that they can win in the trenches. They just need to make some plays. Marcus Cooper.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the takeaways really are the difference maker, and the Bears were able to get two of them early in the game, one being on special teams, the other on a corner blitz from Bryce Callahan, which was a great call by Vic Fangio, punched the ball loose on a strip sack, and the Bears took over. Those were the only two they managed the entire game, but it did give them a jump start in that football game, gave them a lead, which is something last week we talked about. It's hard to win football games when you don't have leads. And this Bears team really over the last 4 years has not been playing with leads at all. So when you can get those takeaways early and jump out to a good start, that really helped them. Because in the end, they had to hold off the Steelers, and it wasn't easy. But the fact they had that lead really helped. But I will say, you got to start picking the ball off. I mean, there were opportunities within this game. Going back and watching the game footage, so this is just the regular CBS broadcast today that I'm watching, and you saw one play where Kyle Fuller made it look like a nice play to bat the ball loose, bat the ball away past defense. It was a good play, but from my angle from the press box, I was able to see him early in the play, and he failed to get his head around when he should have, and had he done that, it would have been an easy interception. That's kind of the stuff you don't always see when you're watching at home on your couch. That could have been an interception. Marcus Cooper also dropped an interception later in the game. Those are plays that, as well as I think the secondary is playing right now, it's not a high level, but it's good enough right now. It's better for the Bears cornerbacks, but they need to start getting interceptions. And those were plays that were left out on the field yesterday.
Adam Hoge, my guest, of course, as he joins us every Monday for Monday Evening Quarterback. 312-981-7200. We're breaking down the Bears' victory. It kind of sounds like we're breaking down a loss, but they did get the victory yesterday in overtime. So we'll take a quick break. When we come back, the next segment dedicated to your analysis of Mike Glennon, the quarterback of the Chicago Bears, seems to be regressing in week three of a very young season where, you know, there's already been calls since the preseason for us to go with the rookie. He did not make a case for himself yesterday, and Adam will explain why. It's a download. It's Monday Evening Quarterback, 312-981-7200. Stay with us.
Behind the intended receiver.
Well, highlights complimentary of CBS. What a game yesterday, but one of the things that did not go well for the Chicago Bears was its quarterback play. Once again, this is at least 2 weeks in a row. You could say that the fourth quarter of game one against the Atlanta Falcons was adequate. Adam Hoge on the line with us, WGN Radio Sports. Of course, you can find his stuff at WGNRadio.com/Bears, podcasts, blogs, great pieces, including a fantastic breakdown, oral history of the dumbest play in NFL history is Marcus Cooper. amazing to talk to all the players from the Steelers to the refs to the coaches to the Bears to Marcus Cooper himself. It's at WGNRadio.com. It's a must read. All right, let's talk about Mike Glennon because – it felt to me that this was the worst quarterback in the NFL. Like I watching the game in the third and fourth quarter when we were trying not to lose it, you really felt that Mike Glennon was overmatched.
So part of this is how Glennon played, and the other part is how the Bears really held him back, really the game plan, right, and how they used him. So I went back tonight, and I focused just on Glennon's game. Okay, officially on the stat line, 15 to 22 for 101 yards, which is not a lot of yards for a quarterback in an NFL game, but 101 passing yards was the official number, a touchdown, and an interception. But as much as 101 passing yards doesn't seem like a lot, in reality, it was less than that, okay? Because I charted all 15 of his completions, and there was only one of those completions that traveled more than 10 yards beyond the line of scrimmage.
Wow.
And when you factor in, so the way you calculate this is basically based on the line of scrimmage, where the completion takes place. So, you know, you could have a two-yard pass, right, that gets, you know, run all the way for a touchdown, like 50 yards. And right. that goes down as 52 passing yards. But in essence, he only threw the ball 2 yards. So when you really go through and chart it all, while Glennon got credit for 101 passing yards, this is as much as I can simplify this. His completions only traveled a total of 19 yards beyond the line of scrimmage throughout this football game.
What?
6 of those 15 completions, Justin, came behind the line of scrimmage, and another 3 were at the line of scrimmage. That means that only 6 of his completions in the entire game were actually thrown beyond the line of scrimmage.
I have the same question. 773 has the same question. That why did the Pittsburgh Steelers defense give Mike Glennon, especially late in the game in third and fourth quarter, that check down? It felt like, again, you kind of mentioned at the beginning that Steelers played bad. That this also the coaching. Glennon had the check down to the running back all game, even in the fourth quarter when everybody in the stadium, you and I was sitting at home, even you know people who weren't even paying attention to the game knew he couldn't throw more than 10 or 15 yards.
But the thing was, is as well as the Bears were able to run the football in this game, one of their touchdowns came on a turnover, right? So on a takeaway for the Bears. So that's points off turnovers, and the Bears didn't score in the second half of the game.
No.
So from the Steelers' standpoint, they're concentrating on stopping the run, and they're willing to give up these little dink and dunks that Mike Glennon was doing the entire game because they have a good offense, and they were trusting Ben Roethlisberger in the offense to score more than they did. All right? So I don't have a problem with the defensive game plan from the Steelers. I mean, they should have been able to win this game. It's actually kind of embarrassing they didn't.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. The way that the Bears didn't score a point until the overtime on the Jordan Howard touchdown. It's interesting that the Chicago Bears and the offense under John Fox and Dowell Loggins, this is the game plan with this quarterback, this $18 million quarterback that we got in the offseason to replace not only Jay Cutler, but Brian Hoyer, Matt Barkley, Connor Shaw, I guess you would say, like other quarterbacks that were on the roster. Mike Glennon came in to give us experience and to run what we considered to be a West Coast kind of complicated offense. And what we're getting is a quarterback who can't throw the ball for more than 10 yards. And now we get it. Receivers have been hurt. But also a quarterback that's not taking care of the ball. If there's one thing that you can say about Mike Glennon is that he doesn't turn the ball over. But as we've seen in the last week in Tampa and yesterday against Pittsburgh, he's turning the ball over at the wrong time.
Exactly. I mean, that was the big thing that they're selling everybody on, right? I mean, Trubisky's a rookie. He's going to make rookie mistakes. So we're going to go with the veteran who we can trust to run the offense and not kill us. And what you saw on Sunday is a guy that, like I just went through with the numbers, they really did not let him throw the ball downfield. There was really only one shot down the field. It was a ball that traveled 33 yards in the air that probably actually should have been caught by Marcus Wheaton. But it was a diving attempt. Other than that, the entire game, there was basically nothing. And so you're seeing them dial back this quarterback because they're so afraid of him killing the Bears. Doesn't it seem hypocritical? I mean, they're not letting Mike Glennon do anything because it seems like they're that frightened by him. And in that case, why not play the rookie? And I'll take it a step further. If Trubisky's really not ready still, then, A, why was he promoted to be the backup? And why is he even active on game day when this is what you have from your starter? Because, quite frankly, Mark Sanchez could be running this offense right now.
I would be okay with that.
he could easily go out there and only throw 6 passes past the line of scrimmage. Yeah. I mean, anybody could do that, really. And it gets back to, why did they spend so much money on Mike Glennon? And again, I keep saying this. Maybe Jay Cutler wouldn't have been the greatest influence on Mitch Trubisky. Maybe that's something that they were afraid of. I don't know. But Jay Cutler was due less money than Glennon is making right now, and you would at least have more of an offense with him still here.
I I have such a hard time with it because I have been someone who, you know, I'd like to see the Bears win. So I understand the idea that I think I'd said it last week that, Reed noticed Wilson's book recently and talked about Buddy Ryan said he didn't play rookies because rookies get you beat. That was his quote. That's why he never liked rookies. So I can understand like the old school coaches like John Fox and coaches like that say, I don't want to put my final year that I've, could possibly go one way or another in the hands of a rookie. But watching Mike Glennon, a veteran, play this, it's either A, he doesn't have the skills to be quarterback in the NFL. I mean, he is quickly dropping to the worst quarterback in the NFL, and that's saying a lot with a lot of the backups who are playing right now. Or the Bears' offensive coordinator and the offensive game plan is way too John Shoup. It's way too truncated, way too conservative. They're actually not giving Mike Glennon the chance to win slash lose, meaning if he fails, they look bad. So why not just control him and keep him in a box and we'll try to win the old John Fox, Jake Delhomme way? And I just feel like they're almost setting it up. They're trying to control this controversy.
Yeah, so here's why I don't think it's the play calling. I actually think Dow Loggins has done a nice job so far this season because, well, for one, let's go back to the preseason when Mitch Trubisky actually played. It was like a completely different playbook, wasn't it? If you're really paying attention, they opened the offense a lot more. They got him rolling out. They got him in places that Mike Glennon physically cannot go with his legs because he cannot move out of the pocket. So I think it looks Shoupian, if that's a term, John Shoupian, because that's what Glennon – that's all really all Glennon can do right now. And I will say, I mean, when you look at the fact that 12 of Glennon's 15 completions were to running backs, and 9 of those 12 completions to running backs were completed either behind or at the line of scrimmage, those are essentially running plays, are they not? Yeah. It's instead of handing the ball off to the running back, you're just trying to get them in a little bit more space by that space, especially when the Steelers are coming up and trying to stop the run like they were. So those were essentially all running plays. And I give Dow Loggins credit for coming up with that kind of creativity to get the ball in Tariq Cohen's hands in space when you have a Steelers defense, a good defense, that's playing so far up into the box because they're not afraid of the quarterback.
Yeah. All right, let me 847 says, you guys just can't be positive for one night after a great victory. That's where I will say it's not a great victory. The Bears,
we were very positive about the defense.
Yeah, we were. And when we'll take a break here and we'll get Rob's news, and then we'll talk about the positive, which is the running game. Jordan Howard gutted it out yesterday. Tariq Cohen as well. That is the game plan, the thunder and lightning that's happening with the two running backs. That is the positive upon positives when it comes to the Bears. The Bears, of course, 1-2 now after beating the Steelers in overtime. And Adam Hoge was there, and he is breaking it down for us tonight. You can find all his stuff at WGNradio.com/Bears. We'll take a break. We'll get the news. We'll come back. We'll talk about the positives. And then we got to talk about this Marcus Cooper nonsense. I mean, really one of the worst. I mean, I was going to – I felt like I was watching when – remember the old days which I would get a Sports Illustrated and they would – subscription and they would throw in a blooper reel or a blooper VHS. Mm-hmm. That's what I felt like. This is the 2017 of
it was the Cooper blooper.
The Cooper blooper. Trademark. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get the news with Rob. We'll come back with Adam. Stay with us.
To the left side and the touchdown. Jordan Howard.
Thanks, Rob. Sorry about the Steelers, buddy. It's the download here at 720 WGN. Within this truncated hour, Patty Vasquez coming up here at 11 o'clock. We're doing our Bears evening quarterback. 312-981-7200 if you want to get on the action. The Bears beat the Steelers at Soldier Field to go 1-2. They got a big showdown coming up Thursday night football against the Green Bay Packers. Adam Hoge on the line, WGNradio.com/Bears, where you can find all the great work that Adam puts together for the station covering this team. Adam, let's get to the positives as we were kind of like I said, the most pessimistic win in Bears history. But the positives, of course, have to do with the running game. The thunder and lightning of Jordan Howard and Tariq Cohen, it's paying dividends.
Yeah, it is. And what a gutsy effort yesterday by Jordan Howard, who ran for 138 yards on 23 attempts, averaging 6 yards per carry. And doing so with a hurt shoulder. He's got a sprained AC joint in his right shoulder. He fell on it a couple times during that game. Had to be helped off the field. came back right twice, you know, just a few plays later. Kyle Long talked about this today at House Hall and how that gave him some juice in the huddle when they saw Jordan Howard back in there. They all knew he was hurt. They all knew he was playing through it, and they felt like that and kept inspiring the running game that he kept going out there and playing through that. So it was a gutsy effort by Jordan Howard. And then, yeah, I mean, with Tariq Cohen and this little lightning and thunder, Cohen came in there, 78 yards on 12 carries. It's a perfect balance between your number one and number two change of pace running back. And Cohen's so versatile, can catch passes out of the backfield. And actually, let's give Jordan Howard credit. He's had a ton of problems catching the football, and he caught all five of the targets that were thrown his way for 26 yards in this football game too. So he did a good job of catching the football, and those running backs really carried this Bears team to a victory.
The other unsung heroes for the game have to be the offensive line beyond a Charles Leno penalty on the 1 yard line. The offensive line held up. Besides Mike Lennon getting sacked in a couple times there, I mean, they seemed to be ready to run the ball, and they did in extreme heat, and they seemed to open lanes against a pretty stingy Steeler defense.
Yeah, they weren't perfect by any means, but overall, good enough. Bobby Massey played a lot better. I actually had him graded out as the best offensive lineman yesterday. Kyle Long, he talked a little bit about this today too. He had some mistakes out there, some blocks he'd like to have back, but overall he graded out positively for me, so it was a good game for him. Cody Whitehair still kind of juggling through a few positions, overall playing well enough. And let's give Bradley Soule some credit. A lot of fans probably don't even know who this guy is. They picked him up as a free agent in the offseason.
Two false starts in that fourth quarter, though. That was pretty good.
Yeah, however, I watched those closely today. He got called for a false start when four guys jumped off at the same time.
Yeah, okay.
And it seemed to either be on the center, not snapping the ball, or I'm not sure if something was going on with Mike Glennon's cadence, because there seemed to be a lot of confusion there on both of those false starts that Soule officially goes into this, you know, the stat book for getting the penalty. I really don't think it was his fault.
Right. The other area that we should talk about in the offense before we shift to defense is wide receiver. 708's got a good point about wide receivers, saying, you know, there was only one catch. And it was a classic Bears call where it was 3rd and 12 and they threw it under to whoever for 6 yards or whatever, 9 yards. But he says, here's 708 says, let's be fair to Glennon. This is also why I think it would be bad to start our rookie. Our receivers can't get open, and when they do, they drop balls. It's a huge problem, and it seems to be why you're seeing only the tight ends and the running backs in action. What do you make of that? I mean, are we at a point where we could also put some pressure or some blame on the wide receiving corps for the Chicago Bears?
Here's why I'm not buying that. Well, first and foremost, it's not a great group of wide receivers. Everybody knows that. It's obvious. They've had injuries. It wasn't a great group to begin with, even before Cam Meredith and Kevin White went down. But here's why I'm not buying that Mitch Trubisky cannot operate with this wide receiver group. Okay, for one, go back and watch the All-22 film from the last couple weeks. It's not available yet for this game, but I will watch it when it's released by the NFL. There are guys open. So this idea that wide receivers are not open is wrong. There are guys open, and Mike Glennon's not always hitting them. Okay, in fact, on both of those interceptions last week in Tampa, he missed guys wide open, and he threw to somebody who's covered, and he threw an interception. So they are open. They're not open all the time. It's not like Dez Bryant's out there for you, but there are guys open. Okay, and here's the other problem. When you have a quarterback that has to get rid of the ball so quickly, and they're basically limited right now to checkdowns, as I just went through, you're not even really giving your – one, you're not getting your wide receivers really involved in the game plan to begin with. Part of that is probably that they don't trust them either. But also, when your quarterback can't buy time, okay, when he's kind of stuck in the pocket and has to get rid of the ball quickly, you have to have elite wide receivers who can win at the line of scrimmage immediately. That's obviously not what the Bears have. So, but if you put out a Mitch Trubisky who does have the ability to roll out, to buy extra time, to allow his wide receivers more time to get open, then you can start to get things going in the passing game. That's why I refuse to believe that Trubisky shouldn't play, because there's not good enough wide receivers out there. He can make them better.
And you know, just perfect evidence across on the other side of the ball. Ben Roethlisberger has been doing this for years. I mean, that's his strength, is that he is able to be flexible. Even though he's a big body, he's able to buy time. And those guys like Antonio Brown, or whether it's Martavis Bryant, whoever, they can get open. That's his strength. And almost, you know, I love that Bryce Callahan got the strip sack. That was huge. But Big Ben was off on his timing and the way he held the ball way too long on that play. But he does that because he's got confidence that he can move when he needs to move.
And he had a guy wide open too. I'm forgetting who it was off the top of my head, but there was a guy underneath, speaking of checkdowns, was standing there with his hands up in the air on that play, and he never looked to his right, and that allowed Bryce Callahan to come over and strip the ball from him. So, yeah, I mean, you can go across the league. I mean, there's plenty of quarterbacks. It's not exactly – Aaron Rodgers has obviously had some decent wide receivers, but I also think he's made guys like Jordy Nelson and Randall Cobb better than they would be on other teams. They're good players. I'm not trying to take anything away from them, but Aaron Rodgers makes them better. And I'm not saying the Bears have an Aaron Rodgers. I'm not saying that's what Mitch Trubisky is. I'm not saying that he's even a Ben Roethlisberger. But we're just talking about right now how more mobile quarterbacks, guys who can elude pressure, and I've said this to you over and over again, and I'll continue to write about it and say it to you guys, one of Trubisky's greatest strengths, and it goes back to his college tape. I saw it before the draft, and one of the reasons why I loved him is he just seems to have that instinctual feel for when the pressure is coming. He sidesteps it. The great quarterbacks do that, and I see that on Trubisky's tape. So that's one of the reasons why I think he has really high potential.
312-981-7200. 708 says, I really like the secondary. You know, it may not be of the Mike Brown, Peanut Tillman variety, but it's better than we've seen in the past, yesterday included. They seem to play well against some of the best receivers in football. Even with what we were talking about, the missed interceptions and what have you, they seem to step up to the challenge of being able to stop these receivers.
Well, the corners are covering better. I give Vic Fangio a lot of credit. I was really curious, with Prince Amukamara coming back and making his Bears debut, what Vic Fangio would do with Kyle Fuller, who has played pretty well so far this season, and I think had earned a spot to stay on the field. I wasn't sure if they would kick him inside on nickel downs, which Fangio has said over and over again he doesn't really want to do, and so they didn't do that. But they created a rotation throughout this game between Fuller, Cooper, and Prince Amukamara, and they played overall pretty well. There was a couple penalties here and there. There were some receptions here and there, but all three of them ended up making key plays on the ball. Cooper had a pass defense on a play that would have been a touchdown. Amukamara had one in the second quarter that would have been a touchdown. These are big plays that in the past were easy scores. So I agree that the corners are playing a lot better. My concern right now is with the safeties, and I think this front seven, I mentioned this a little bit early on in the hour, I think the front seven's really kind of masking maybe some deficiencies with the safeties right now. Eddie Jackson, I can be a good player. He's still a rookie feeling himself out there right now, and there actually have been a couple of blown coverages that they got away with. I actually think that first play of the game, if you remember when Ben Roethlisberger had Martavis Bryant wide open on the first play of the game, it should have been 7-0 Steelers. It looked like that was Cooper's fault, but if you watch the replay, he immediately ran to Eddie Jackson on that play, and I think there was some miscommunication there with the rookie safety. Yeah.
312-981-7200. All right, here's what we'll do. We'll take our last break of the night, and we'll come back, and we got to talk about the Marcus Cooper play, even though maybe we don't. Maybe we just move on from it. It's the dumbest play in history. But also, talk about the Packers. Thursday night at Lambeau Field, not a big turnaround, and we're going to have to do it with some key players that are out possibly for a long time. Adam Hogue, WGNRadio.com/Bears, covers the Bears for WGN Radio with us tonight. Stay with us.
He has yet to miss anything this year. They're ruling. Let's see what they rule in the end zone. There's a penalty marker down.
I think that ball was knocked out before he crossed the goal line. At least from here, he relaxed too much before he crossed the goal line.
He did slow down, did he not? And that's just a bad play. It's a horrible play.
Good call, man. That's on CBS. Adam Hogue with us tonight. Covers the Bears for WGN. WGNRadio.com/Bears. Podcasts, blogs. Beat reporters on the show all the time, of course, on the show on Saturday, The Beat. All right, Adam, that play, you have an awesome oral history on WGNRadio.com interviewing a lot of different players. But it's universally, I mean, and it's good to see, I mean, most of the players, even the Steelers, they recognize that this was a boneheaded play.
Yeah, Vance McDonald, who's the guy that stripped Cooper at the one-yard line, called it unprofessional. And that's his former teammate. They played together in San Francisco. So, I mean, they know each other, and that's how, I mean, candid, the guy who made the good play on the play was calling Cooper out, as he should. I mean, this was, it's actually incorrect to say that he slowed down, because he stopped.
Yeah.
Like, he actually stopped at the 1 yard line.
Yeah, I don't know what he's doing.
He didn't look up there's a giant scoreboard you can look up at to see if anyone's running behind you. Or you could turn, look at the replay. He didn't turn over his shoulder to even see if anyone was chasing him. So I don't know what made him think that there was no one there. It just doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't. I was talking to a friend of mine, and we both felt like maybe there was money on the game. Or something. He didn't want to break the spread. He didn't want to ruin the spread or something. I don't know what happened there, but that, I mean, it was almost, he had to go out of his way to botch that play. That's what I think all of the fans. And OB today had a good point about, you know, a player does that, you want to see some fire and brimstone from the coach on the sideline. You want the dick to kind of grab his face mask.
Yeah.
You want a positional coach, a DB coach to come over, or a special teams coach to yell at him and say something. But the Bears, they just don't do that. They're just not what this team is about. It's lacking that kind of fire to get in someone like Marcus Cooper's face after a mistake like that.
Yeah, my oral history of this play, you can one of the quotes is from Cooper saying that John Fox just came up to him and said, go make a play. And you know what? That philosophy from Fox actually worked, because Cooper made a couple good plays in the fourth quarter, including deflecting a touchdown away.
Yeah.
You know, so a lot of people called for him to get benched. Understandably so. I get the reaction. I understand that Bill Belichick would not put up with this.
Yeah.
He would not put up with this, and the guy would have been benched, not played. I don't know what would have happened. But
here's
the thing.
If this was a loss, I wonder if fans would be a little less forgiving right now.
But that's where that kind of treatment's actually effective, because you don't see this stuff with the Patriots, and that's why.
Yeah.
Because they know that they'll get benched. They'll know. It's just established when you have a head coach that's been there that long. I don't know, but I think it worked out that the Bears ended up winning this game and they kept Cooper in the game, but I certainly understand those people that thought that Cooper should have been benched.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty egregious. All right, so injuries play a big role. Quentin Demps, the free agent safety that came over, big acquisition in the offseason, has been a pretty solid anchor presence for a position that we haven't had much talent at for the last couple of years. He leaves the game in the fourth quarter with, now it's called, a broken arm.
Yeah, broken arm. I think it's the forearm. It doesn't sound like it's necessarily going to be season-ending, although, the way the Bears do this, it's hard to ever have any idea. I think Quentin Demps and Nick Witkowski, who suffered the pec injury last week, are candidates to land on injured reserve and potentially come back later this season. You're allowed to bring two players back off of IR. So the Bears will continue to weigh that situation. They're still kind of evaluating Kwiatkowski to see if they need to put him on IR or not. But Demps was one of your captains, and so you've lost both of your captains. Your week one captains on defense were Jarrell Freeman and Quentin Demps, and they're out right now. So you can't minimize that. It's a veteran presence on the back end of your defense. I'm not sure Demps is a huge playmaker. He's not like a Pro Bowler or anything like that. But with a rookie back there in Eddie Jackson, I think they like that veteran rookie tandem. Mm-hmm. And now you go back to Adrian Amos, who we've seen doesn't make a whole lot of plays on the football. However, is pretty sound as a football player. Will usually do the correct things out there and is a good tackler.
The other injuries were, I guess, Grasu, but I'm not sure if he came back in the game, but they were switching Whitehair back and forth from center to guard. What's this? That plus, of course, we saw Jordan Howard, who has the sprained shoulder, who played through it. Those injuries week to week, and then the guys who sat out this week, Josh Sitton, most importantly, are they anywhere along where they might be playing on Thursday?
So the interesting thing about these Thursday games is the teams have to release an injury report today because you're 3 days away from the game. And, of course, they don't practice. So it's like a hypothetical, had they practiced, this is what they would have been. So Hronas Gersou officially listed as limited with a hand injury. Now, he actually, going back and watching the tape, I believe he suffered that injury on Jordan Howard's first touchdown of this game in the first quarter. Actually, the play before that on first down, he played through it. And then on the next series, he was still out there and he had a bad snap to Mike Glennon. Right, and that's when they took him out because it's a snapping hand. I think he broke a bone. They didn't say that today. John Fox wouldn't say that, but I think he has a broken bone on that hand that he tried to play through. So that the problem there is you can club that up and maybe play guard, but you can't snap the ball with a club on your hand.
That's what he does, right.
So that's the problem, and Kersou's kind of limited to center. So that's something to really I'm skeptical that he's going to be able to go Thursday. Now, the big question, Josh Sitton didn't get to play at Lambeau last year. This is his former team, the Packers. He was hurt last year for this game at Lambeau, sat out Sunday with his rib injuries, limited. I got to think he's going to do everything he possibly can to get out there by Thursday, and maybe that's why he sat on Sunday.
All right, last question here as we wrap up. But the Bears-Packers at Lambeau Field, what do the Bears have to do to win this game? And what do you see early on as the keys to success? Because this could change the season. This is a big game. If they come out at 2-2, 500, and beat the Packers on national television, this is a different. We're singing a different tune on Friday.
Well, for one, they need Jordan Howard. That's the one guy I didn't just talk about with injuries. And interestingly, weirdly enough, he's not on the injury report today, even though everyone knows he has a shoulder injury. So that's weird. But he does have a shoulder injury. I think he's going to play through it. Obviously, he played through that game yesterday. He'll try to play through Thursday, I believe, and they need him. So I think it's going to be much of the same. I know fans don't like it. John Fox gave kind of a weird answer today when I asked him if Mike Glennon was starting, you know, just to confirm. I think at this point, you need to keep asking
the question. Yeah.
And Fox kind of said that's likely, but he, I don't know. It'll probably be Glennon. He's probably just messing around with the Packers and trying to make them think twice about it. But if that's the case, then unfortunately, it's going to be much of the same. It's going to be a lot of running the football, not letting Glennon do much. Hopefully the defense plays well, and hopefully you get a couple weird bounces and the Packers don't play that well. You're really just trying to keep it close and pull out a victory. That's the game plan as long as Glennon is in there. And it doesn't look good, doesn't look pretty, but that's what it is.
That's what we love to hear. Yeah. Adam Hogue, WGN Radio Sports, covers the Bears, WGNRadio.com/Bears. He joins us Mondays for Monday Evening Quarterback. Adam, great stuff. Again, check out your great story, The Oral History, WGNRadio.com. Great work.
Thanks, Justin.
And that's just a bad play. It's a horrible play.